Iran's leader says that enemies have been frustrated in encountering the Islamic Republic due to the nation's resistance against their pressure. Top negotiators from Iran and the United States arrive in the Qatar capital for indirect talks on the removal of anti-Tehran sanctions. Based on official data, Sri Lankan economy contracted in the first quarter of 2022. It's expected to shrink even more amid the country's worst financial crisis in decades. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Top story this hour, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution saying that enemies have been frustrated time and again thanks to the Iranian nation's resilience against their pressure. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says that over the past four decades, enemies have been hoping that certain weaknesses and shortfalls would eventually result in the collapse of the Islamic Republic. Yet the Iranian people have dashed their hopes. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the Iranian people's resilience, their endeavors, and refusal to be intimidated are what make them victorious vis-a-vis the enemies. The leader made those comments in a meeting with judiciary officials, whom he advised to make the fight against corruption a priority. Top negotiators from Iran and the United States are in the Qatar capital for indirect talks over the revival of the 2015 deal, known as the JCPOA. Ali Bagherkani and Robert Malley arrived in Doha earlier today. The negotiations will be held within the framework of the Vienna talks that were held between Iran and the remaining parties to the JCPOA from April 2021 till March this year. Iran says that the Doha talks will focus on the issues about the removal of the anti-Iran sanctions that were left unresolved at the last Vienna session. Tehran emphasizes that nothing will be added to or deducted from the agreements already reached in Vienna. It's also urged the U.S. and three EU signatories to the JCPOA to adopt a realistic approach so that a deal could be reached. The 2015 accord was left in tatters after Washington unilaterally abandoned it in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran. Iran says that the fact that the U.S. uses economic means to exert pressure on independent countries clearly violates human rights. Foreign Ministry says Washington is resorting to economic terrorism to achieve its political goals. The ministry has released a statement on the occasion of the American Human Rights Review and Exposure Week. The statement says that the U.S. unilateral sanctions meant to force governments to change their policies is a clear and systematic violation of human rights. According to the ministry, sanctions have become a tool in Washington's hands to violate the legitimate rights of the Iranian people. The ministry also listed a number of crimes that the U.S. has committed directly or indirectly against the Iranians. The head of the UK-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Chajri, believes that the U.S. sanctions should be regarded as war crimes, as those measures kill more innocent people than actual wars do.
Now we are seeing that in some ways and many ways, more people, more innocent people are dying and being killed as a result of these abusive sanctions. And it's been going on for a very long time. The policy of killing and creating what they call maximum pressure of really killing innocent civilians to create pressure to do a regime change and a change of the legitimate governments. And that is something that still international structures, including UN, are failing to recognize that this war of sanctions or use of sanctions as a tool, it's actually more abusive war than the sort of traditional wars. And it kills more people. It kills the largest proportion of most deprived and most innocent section of the society. And it's been designed to do that thing. And it's not recognized as war crime unless these sanctions are part of an actual war. Otherwise, they're not really recognized as a war crime or indeed unlawful.
The United States is looking to set up regional military alliances to confront nations that it views as hostile. Now, the goal is to form NATO-like blocs that would serve Washington's interests. But considering the history of NATO itself, the question is how successful any new alliance could be.
The United States is drumming up support from regional nations in East and West Asia to unite under alliances against Washington's perceived threats. According to a Wall Street Journal report, the U.S. held secret meetings with senior Israeli and Arab military figures, namely from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Jordan, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain at the Red Sea resort of Sharm el-Sheikh in March. The talks were focused on Iran. Washington has been mulling the idea of forming a regional alliance against Tehran by bringing those with strained relations with Iran closer to Israel for quite some time now. The Abraham Accords, under which several Arab nations normalized their ties with Israel, is widely believed to have been part of the plan. This is while Iran is taking diplomatic steps to strengthen ties with its regional neighbors, which may include some of the very nations that are being considered by Washington as potential anti-Tehran allies. The Islamic Republic and Saudi Arabia have been engaged in talks aimed at the normalization of their bilateral relations over the past few months. Iranian and Emirati officials have also expressed willingness to restore warmer ties in recent months.
What we can observe is the world as a whole is moving towards a more multipolar world where countries are not afraid to be in relationship with one another despite U.S. interests. And we see this happening all throughout the world. And we can simply look to the summit of the because that was a failed attempt at the U.S. to kind of bully itself into remaining and enforcing its U.S. hegemony in other places throughout the world. And so with recent events that have been happening around the world, the Russia-Ukraine conflict, the U.S. trying to again impose U.S. hegemony in other places throughout the world, we see countries moving further and further away from U.S. interests and really focusing on building with one another in the best interests of their own countries.
That poses some serious questions about the effectiveness of a potential U.S.-backed regional anti-Iran coalition.
Now, NATO's fundamental goal is to safeguard the freedom and security of its members through political and military means. But NATO's existence is primarily based on war scenarios. Washington contributes the most to NATO's budget, around 17%. Therefore, the alliance's policy directives are heavily influenced by the U.S. foreign policy that's marked by provocations and warmongering.
North Korea has accused the United States of trying to set up a NATO-style military alliance in Asia, saying Washington continues to hold military maneuvers with East Asian states despite Pyongyang's warnings. In a statement posted on its official website on Sunday, North Korea's foreign ministry said Washington is making a, quote, full-fledged move to establish an Asia-style NATO while blatantly holding joint military exercises with Japan and South Korea. The remarks come on the heels of recent joint exercises by the U.S., South Korean, and Japanese forces, which involved a U.S. aircraft carrier for the first time in more than 4 years. In a meeting after the drills, North Korean officials condemned aggressive moves by Washington and Seoul, pledging to take revenge on the U.S. imperialists as they marked the 72nd anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War. Why is it that Washington prefers setting up military deterrence when it can resolve conflicts through diplomatic means? Wouldn't that be a less costly and more efficient way of diffusing tensions?
We live in a world where, with all the nuances of North Korea, with all the misinformation that we are told about North Korea, the U.S. is trying to create fear without actual evidence. So what we can expect in upcoming months is that the U.S. is going to try to make it seem as if North Korea is the aggressor, as if they are not doing military exercises right outside of North Korea's borders to provoke and to create the conditions to justify military actions and military exercises against the people in North Korea that have chosen to continue to build their country in favor of a one Korea and reuniting their countries and moving away from U.S. Interests.
The history of U.S.-led alliances, including that of NATO, shows that more often than not, they fail to accomplish their self-declared objectives. It wouldn't come as a surprise if newer ones won't have a different fate.
Now moving on, based on statistics, Sri Lanka's economy contracted in the first quarter of this year and is expected to shrink further as the country is suffering from its worst economic crisis. Official data indicating the economy declined by 1.6% the first 3 months compared to the same period a year ago. The island nation is currently seeking an International Monetary Fund bailout to secure funds for essential commodities. Shortages of food and fuel have caused prices to soar, and inflation is now running at 30%. The government has announced a two-week halt to all fuel sales except for essential services such as the health sector. Experts say an escalation of fuel shortage could lead to a fresh wave of demonstrations. Last week, Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe said that the country's economy has collapsed after months of shortages and cannot even import oil. Ukraine says the five people are killed in Kharkiv, the northeastern city that has been the scene of constant Russian shelling since the past day. Local authorities say that more than 20 people were also wounded after strikes hit civilian buildings, including a school. Elsewhere, heavy fighting is underway in the eastern Donbas region. Russian troops are advancing into Lysychansk, the last major city still controlled by Ukrainian forces in Luhansk province. The provincial governor there is saying, however, that Ukrainian forces are trying to hold the line against Russia, buying time for the arrival of Western weapons. Now moving on to the central Ukrainian city of Kremenchuk, where Kiev says a Russian missile attack on a shopping mall killed at least 18 people on Monday. Search is underway for some 40 people who have been missing since the attack. Russia has denied hitting the mall, saying it struck a nearby weapons depot. It says a subsequent explosion of ammunition triggered a fire in the mall. Well, a short time ago, we're joined by our correspondent in Ukraine, John Miller, and he says the Monday mall attack, like most other events in the Ukraine war, is being used as propaganda stunts by both sides.
There's a propaganda war going on in Ukraine at the moment as Ukraine and the West try to make out Russia to be committing heinous war crimes. One of the reasons they do that is in order to demonize Russia and to make their people and governments support sending more weapons to Ukraine. Meanwhile, of course, Russia uses propaganda as well, trying to justify its invasion. And this event here is, just like most other events in this war, is being used for propaganda purposes for both sides. Both sides blame each other. What I can say is President Zelensky claims that 1,000 people were in the shopping center. I find that very unlikely. Both sides exaggerate figures for their own reasons. Right now, in Telegram channels, on Twitter, there's various pro-Russian journalists or bloggers pointing out some discrepancies in the footage, saying things that, like, there are no women in the footage at a busy shopping mall. You'd expect women and children to be there, but it's just men. Also citing there's no bodies, there's no injured being carried away, while the West will claim that anybody who writes about this are conspiracy theorists or pro-Putin. So this propaganda battle being waged in this event, just like every other event, as the West seeks to blame Russia for committing war crimes, and Russia seeks to make out that these are provocations in order to demonize Russia. But what actually happened, we'll have to wait to see.
Russia says it will stop its offensive in Ukraine as soon as Ukrainian forces lay down their arms.
The Ukrainian side can end all this before the end of this day. An order is necessary for the nationalist units to lay down their weapons. An order is necessary for the Ukrainian military to lay down their weapons. And they must fulfill all Russia's demands. Then everything will be over before the day ends.
The Kremlin spokesman says that Russia's special military operation in Ukraine is ongoing according to plan to achieve stated goals. Peskov made a comment after Ukrainian President Zelensky called on G7 leaders to help end the war with Russia by the end of the year. On Tuesday, the G7 leaders ended their three-day summit in Germany. They stressed support for Kiev and agreed to toughen sanctions on Moscow to pressure it into ending the war. Moscow, however, has blamed the West for prolonging the conflict.
It seems to us that the kind of line that the West has taken is absolutely counterproductive and harmful. The more they pump weapons into Ukraine, the longer this conflict will last.
The United States and its Western allies have ramped up arms supplies to Ukraine since the war began in late February. On Monday, the U.S. announced it would send sophisticated anti-aircraft missile systems to Kiev to defend itself against Russian attacks. Last week, the U.S. said it's sending a new batch of military assistance to Ukraine worth $450 million. That pushes Washington's aid to Kiev to over $6 billion. NATO leaders are arriving in the Spanish capital, Madrid, to attend a three-day summit where they're expected to set the Western military alliance's goals for the coming years. Strengthening defenses against Russia and supporting Ukraine are top on the agenda. Ahead of the meeting, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that a comprehensive assistance package will be agreed on to help Ukraine. He added that Russia's war in Ukraine has sparked a code fundamental shift in the bloc's approach to defense, stressing that member states will have to boost their military spending. Another main point of discussion will be Finland and Sweden's NATO membership bids, which is being blocked by Turkey. Stoltenberg says that he hopes a progress on the issue in Madrid, but it's far from certain. Now, from Europe to U.S., a remote area in Texas, an abandoned truck, and the stacks of dead bodies. And that's the grim picture from one of the deadliest cases of human smuggling along the U.S.-Mexico border. Authorities have found the bodies of 50 undocumented migrants in a semi-trailer near the rail track in San Antonio. 16 people, including four minors, were still alive. They're being treated for heat stroke and exhaustion. So far, three people are in police custody. The U.S. border with Mexico has seen an influx of migrants over the past months. Many of them are returned under a controversial policy that former President Trump introduced. Incumbent Joe Biden has faced lots of criticism from fellow Democrats for failing to reverse the restrictions. Republicans blast his open border policy. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
in the limelight.
Through its agencies, the U.S. government regularly plants fake news and false information. Therefore, social media hiring individuals straight from the FBI, CIA, NATO, and other groups to work on regulating disinformation is a fundamentally flawed practice. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Alan McLeod, journalist. This article is published under the heading The Federal Bureau of Tweets. Twitter is hiring an alarming number of FBI agents. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. Some might ask, what is the problem with Twitter actively recruiting from the FBI, CIA, and other three-letter agencies? They, after all, are experts in studying online disinformation and propaganda. What is optical? If a Russian-owned social media apps trust, security and content moderation was run by former KGB or FSB agents and still insisted it was a politically neutral platform, the entire world would laugh. But apart from this, the huge influx of security state personnel into Twitter's decision-making ranks means that the company will start to view every problem in the same manner as the U.S. government does and act accordingly. In terms of their outlooks on the world and on the question of misinformation and internet security, you couldn't get a better field of professionals who are almost inherently going to be more in tune with the government's perspective. Thus, when policing the platform for disinformation and influence campaigns, the former FBI and CIA agents and Atlantic Council fellows only ever seem to find them emanating from enemy states and never from the U.S. regime itself. Twitter has mirrored U.S. hostility towards states like Russia, China, and Cuba, attempting to suppress the reach and influence of their state media by adding warning messages to the tweets of journalists and accounts affiliated with those governments. In a rather bizarre adamant, it explained that it would not be doing the same to state-affiliated media or personalities from other countries, least of all the U.S. state-financed media organizations with editorial independence, like NPR, for example, are not defined as a state-affiliated media for the purposes of this policy, it wrote. Perhaps most notable, however, was Twitter's announcement last year that it was deleting dozens of accounts for the new violation of undermining faith in the NATO alliance. The statement was widely ridiculed online by users. But few noted that the decision was based upon a partnership with the Stanford Internet Observatory, a counter-disinformation think tank, filled with former spooks and state officials, and headed by an individual who is on the advisory board of NATO's Collective Cybersecurity Center of Excellence. That Twitter is working so closely with organizations that are clearly intelligence industry cat's paws should concern all users. While some might be alarmed that Twitter is cultivating such an intimate relationship with the FBI and other groups belonging to the secret state, it is perhaps unfair to single it out, as many social media platforms are doing the same. Facebook, for example, has entered into formal partnership with the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensics Research Lab, whereby the latter holds significant influence over 2.9 billion users' news feeds, helping to decide what content to promote and what content to suppress. The NATO cutout organization now serves as Facebook eyes and ears, according to a Facebook press release. Anti-war and anti-establishment voices across the world have reported massive drops in traffic on the platform. The social media giant also hired former NATO press secretary Ben Nemo to be its head of intelligence. Nemo subsequently used his power to attempt to swing the election in Nicaragua away from the leftist Sandinista party and towards the far-right pro-US candidate, deleting hundreds of left-wing voices in the week of the election, claiming they were engaging in inauthentic behavior. When these individuals, including some well-known personalities, poured onto Twitter, recording video messages proving they were not bots, Twitter deleted those accounts too, in what one commentator called a Silicon Valley double tap strike. An April Mint Press study revealed how TikTok, too, has been filling its organization with alumni of the Atlantic Council, NATO, the CIA, and the State Department. As with Twitter, these new TikTok employees largely work in highly politically sensitive fields such as trust, safety, security, and content moderation, meaning these state operatives hold influence over the direction of the company and what content is promoted and what is demoted. In corporate media, too, we have seen a widespread infiltration of former security officials into the upper echelons of news organizations. So normalized is the penetration of the national security state into the media that is supposed to be holding it into account that few reacted in 2015 when Dawn Eskenazi left her job as National Intelligence Manager for the Western Hemisphere at the Director of National Intelligence to become the Global Business Director of international news conglomerate Thomson Reuters. Eskenazi, a 33-year CIA veteran who had worked her way up to become a director in the organization, was open about what her role was. In a blog post on the Reuters website, she wrote that she was there to meet the desperate needs of the U.S. government, a statement that is at odds with even the most basic journalistic concepts of impartiality and holding the powerful to account. Meanwhile, cable news outlets routinely employ a wide range of former agents and mandarins as trusted personalities and experts. These include former CIA directors John Brennan and Michael Hayden, ex-director of National Intelligence James Clapper, and former Homeland Security Advisor Francis Townsend. And news for so many Americans comes delivered through ex-CIA interns like Anderson Cooper, CIA applicants like Tucker Carlson, or by Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of a powerful National Security Advisor. The FBI has its own former agents on TV as well, with talking heads such as James Gagliano, Asha Rakpa, and Frank Figolowski becoming household names. In short, then, the national security state once used to infiltrate the media. Today, however, the national security state is the media. Social media holds enormous influence in today's society. While this article is not alleging that anyone mentioned is a bad actor or does not genuinely care about the spread of disinformation, it is highlighting a glaring conflict of interest. Through his agencies, the US government regularly plants fake news and false information. Therefore, social media hiring individuals straight from the FBI, CIA, NATO and other groups to work on regulating disinformation is a fundamentally flawed practice. One of media's primary functions is to serve as a fourth estate, a force that works to hold the government and its agencies to account. Yet instead of doing that, increasingly it is collaborating with them. Such are these increasing interlocking connections that it is becoming increasingly difficult to see where big government ends and big media begins.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya man bada'a khalqi wa dhikri wa tarbiyati wa birri wa taghdiyati habni libtida'i karamak wa salifi birrika bi ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi أتراك معذبي بنارك بعد توحيدك وبعد من طوى علي قلبي من معرفتك ولهج به لساني من ذكرك واعتقده ضميري من حبك وبعد صدق اعترافي
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Kumail supplication. Ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi, my Allah, my Master and my Lord, aturaka mu'azzibi binarika ba'da tawhidik, can you be seen tormenting me with your fire after I have professed to your oneness? وَبَعْدَ مَنْ طَوَى عَلَيْهِ قَلْبِي مِنْ مَعْرِفَتِكَ After your cognition, my heart has embraced وَلَهِجَ بِهِ لِسَانِي مِنْ ذِكْرِكَ And the remembrance of you, my tongue, has constantly mentioned. About this sentence, وَبَعْدَ مَنْ طَوَى عَلَيْهِ قَلْبِي مِنْ مَعْرِفَتِكَ After your cognition, my heart has embraced. We said earlier on that cognition of the Almighty Allah is one of the most important prerequisites of the acceptance of prayer. And it could be that Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to teach us this point without which our prayers will not be accepted. Now, you may remember that the true meaning of prayer is turning toward Allah. So this must take place through the ways in which Allah the Exalted has ordered. For example, it has been narrated that once a man from Bani Israel used to worship Allah for 40 nights. Thereafter, he prayed to Allah, but his prayer was not answered. He complained about this to Prophet Isa, who in turn inquired from Allah the Exalted about this. And Allah replied, O Isa, he called me while he had a doubt about you in his heart. This means that true recognition of the Almighty Allah is only reached and fulfilled when you believe in all the Almighty Allah has sent down, whatever His signs are, the prophets, the Imams, and of course the Holy Quran. This is because the reality of prayer is lying in the turning of the heart towards Allah. So if the heart becomes somehow occupied with something or someone other than Almighty Allah, of these worldly distractions and materialistic points, then the supplicant has not been able to reach the reality of prayer. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, "Indeed, Allah does not accept the prayer which rises from the back of a heedless heart." And this is exactly what the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentions to Imam Ali alayhi salam in his will. He says, "Allah does not accept the prayer of a heedless heart."
Oh my God, my Master, my Lord, and my Nourisher, will you see me punished with the fire kindled by you, despite my belief in your unity? And despite the fact that my heart has been filled with knowledge of you, and when my tongue has repeatedly praised you, and my conscience has acknowledged your love, and despite my sincere confessions and my humble begging submissively made to your divinity, no, indeed you are far too kind and generous to destroy one you nourished and supported, or to drive away from yourself one you have kept under your protection.
Thank you, Allah, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, brothers and sisters, when Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "بعد من طوى عليه قلبي من معرفتك," after your cognition my heart has embraced, this means that at first, cognition of the Almighty Allah is one of the most important prerequisites of the acceptance of prayer. And then, this transition has to happen inside the heart, because this is the reality of dua. There must be some changes in the heart of the supplicant. If a supplicant wishes his prayer to be accepted, he must seek tender-heartedness. He must try to soften his heart. And when the heart becomes tender, it opens up. When the heart opens up, the veils between the supplicant and Allah are lifted. The supplicant is now nearer to Almighty Allah because of that riqqatul qalb. And this is when the mode of prayer and request comes into existence. This mode, how you stand while you're asking from the Almighty Allah, this really has an effect on the softening of the heart. The narrations that put emphasis on self-abasement during prayer are in fact for the purpose of reaching this criterion. And Imam Ali alayhi salam, interestingly and knowingly, mentions this, وَاعْتَقَدَهُ ضَمِيرِ مِنْ حُبِّكِ, the love of you to which my mind has clung. Because he knows that the moment of softening of the heart is the very moment of the descent of Allah's mercy. So one should avail such moments by turning his attention to Allah for supplication. Because the mercy of Allah is without any reckoning during such moments. Let us end this episode of the program by a tradition from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He sallallahu says, "Avail yourself of the opportunity of prayer and dua, at the softening of the heart, because it is a mercy. And this could be while the words of dhamir, qalb, and other similar words are used in the supplication, specifically the supplication of Kumail. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Ya Allah, Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به حق تعالی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, today we are going to touch upon the last parts of Imam Khomeini's testament where he addresses the Iranian nation. The Imam reminds the Iranian nation about the cost they have paid and the hardships they have endured to overcome the enemies and to achieve victory. Stay tuned, please. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, addressing the Iranian nation, writes in his testament that the pains and sacrifices are the cost for reaching lofty goals. He writes, "Once more, in the end of this testament, I make bequest to the Iranian nation that, in this world, the magnitude of tolerating troubles, pains, sacrifices, and deprivations are compatible with the magnitude of the goal and its value and lofty degree. What you, the noble and Mujahid nation, have reason for, have been pursuing and sacrificing your life and property, is the loftiest, highest, and most precious goal and purpose which has been and will be presented since the advent of the world till the end. And that is the school of divinity, in the broad sense of it, and the concept of monotheism with its exalted dimensions. The school of divinity and monotheism mentioned by Imam Khomeini has its roots in the belief that Allah is the only being who deserves to be worshipped." Imam Khomeini continues in his testament, "The school of divinity in its broad sense and the concept of monotheism with its exalted dimensions is the basis of creation and its ultimate point in the vast arena of being and the degrees and ranks of the unseen and the seen. And it has been manifested in the Muhammadan school in its full sense, degrees and dimensions and all efforts of great prophets, greetings of God upon them. And the great friends of God, greetings of God upon them, have been made for that, and without that, it will not be possible to reach the absolute perfection and the infinite majesty and beauty. It is that which has made the inhabitants of the earth superior to the denizens of the ethereal heavens. And what the inhabitants of earth achieve in this journey will not be achieved by any creature in the whole creation, publicly or secretly." Imam Khomeini says that the Iranian nation is marching in the way of the divine prophets. He writes, "You, the Mujahid nation, are marching under the flag which is hoisted throughout the material and spiritual world. Know it or not, you are covering the way which is the only way of all great prophets, greetings of God upon them, and the sole way of absolute salvation. It is through this motive that all friends of God hog martyrdom and consider the Red Death sweeter than honey. And your youth in the battlefronts have drunk a sip of it and have become rejoiced. And it has been manifested in their mothers, sisters, fathers, and brothers. And we should truly say, we wish we were with you to achieve a great victory. May that soothing breeze and that zealous manifestation be sweet for them." Imam Khomeini explains that the spirit of devotion and cooperation ruling in the society is one of the manifestations of this sweet sense. He writes, "We should know that this manifestation can be clearly seen in hot farms, in breathtaking factories, in workshops, in centers of industry, invention and innovation, and among the majority of the nation in markets, streets, villages, and on all those who have overtaken these affairs to serve Islam, the Islamic Republic and progress and self-sufficiency of the country. And as long as this spirit of cooperation and devotion is there in the society, the dear country is, God willing, immune against every harm. And thank God, the seminaries and universities and dear youths of the centers of knowledge and education enjoy this divine unseen blessing." Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, continues in his testament, "My bequest to all is to advance, with Almighty God's remembrance, toward self-recognition, self-sufficiency, and independence with all their dimensions. And, undoubtedly, God's hand is with you. If you be at His service and continue the spirit of cooperation for the progress and sublimity of the Islamic country, with the wakefulness, vigilance, devotion, self-sacrifice, and the spirit of resistance and resolve that I see in the dear nation in the way of truth, I hope that, through Almighty God's favor, these humane concepts will be transmitted to the posterior of the nation and every generation will enhance it." Imam Khomeini ends his testament with these words, "With a calm and confident heart, happy spirit, and an inward hopeful of God's favor, I take leave from the sisters and brothers and travel to the eternal abode while I am in urgent need of your good prayers. And I plead with God, the compassionate and the merciful, to accept my apology for coming short of service. And I hope that the nation will accept my apology for shortcomings and faults. They should go forward with power and resolve, knowing that with the departure of a servant, there will be no crack in the iron dam of the nation, as there are more superior servants at the service. And Allah is the guardian of this nation and the oppressed of the world."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.